I'm going to introduce my guest. It's Martina Edwards. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good evening. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm going to read just a real snippet of something. You know, I saw something on one of the many things I found out about you today. But in the new role of Chief of Strategic Partnerships, you're responsible for fundraising activities, you know, for access to capital for entrepreneurs. And that's where you're at today. But right now, I'd like you to just take maybe 30, 60 seconds, or however long it takes to introduce yourself, tell people who you are. Then I'd like to start having a conversation about this journey that you got to be like 85 after I read everything that you've done. You know, so tell us who you are, and then we'll start having this conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mark. I am Martina Marshall Edwards, and I am a wife, a daughter, a mom, and a lot to a lot of people. And I'm a business professional that with a broad portfolio of experience across public and private equity, as well as nonprofit. And I am also recognized, as you noted when you started your show, as the first African-American female broker for Merrill Lynch on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And at the time when I was there, I was the only Black woman of color to be a stock trader on the floor out of its 1,366 members. And we can definitely get into that a bit more, but that is who I am. And I, like you said, I have a long, I always tell people it is a lot to the story behind the glory, you know, and I'm excited to be able to share some of that tonight.
All right. So, you know, as I started reading here, you, early years, it says, not just Alabama, it says rural Alabama. Okay. Okay. I mean, so we just didn't say Alabama, and they made sure to put in rural. So let's talk about your beginnings and how you got started, and, you know, a little bit about your journey. And just so people can see from, you know, from where you came.
Yes, from whence I come. Absolutely. And rural is important for me to note for sure. I've lived in New York twice over. I currently live in Metro Atlanta, but I grew up in a small rural town. And it is, I call it a cluster of towns, right? I grew up in a place called Beatrice, Alabama, that has a population to date of 400 folks. And my grandparents lived in a town over in Chestnut, Alabama, and my other set of grandparents lived in Tunnel Springs, Alabama. So some funny names, but I that's how, before I ever got to college or Wall Street, that's where my values and philosophy about life were really shaped about how I grew up. I spent the first 9 years of my life in a two-bedroom trailer, right? I had livestock, horses and cows in the backyard at every family member's house, and daughter to a mother who was among the youngest of 16 children, and a father who was one of the oldest of six. And I saw a lot in them. You know, they had, my mom was college educated, graduated, and my dad had some college education, but came back to his hometown to make money. So he started driving 18-wheeler trucks, and they both had limited resources and opportunity. But what I learned from them was hard work and putting your best foot forward. So it was a very community environment where, you know, another neighbors were always helping the other neighbor out.
Well, you know, let me ask you a real quick question. In that kind of village setting, neighbors were always helping each other out, but your neighbors, when I was growing up, they could spank you. You know, if you were doing something wrong.
Absolutely.
You know, so it took a village.
You are correct. You know, one thing was there was going to be discipline, and folks were going to know. People were going to let you know, and that's
right.
What I appreciate. I mean, that instilled in me such value that I carry forward in my life, and that shaped my personality and the essence of the spirit of who I am today.
So, small town girl leaves. I can't remember the name of Alabama. What was it?
Beatrice, Alabama.
Okay. And you go to Tuskegee.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you make that leap?
Well, you know, we moved when I was 9 to Montgomery, Alabama, and I will tell people, I always say it was like moving on up. I said, oh my gosh, we're moving to the big city. That's how I looked at it. It was so different than being in the rural part of Alabama where I spent the first 9 years of my life and where my parents grew up. But, you know, I ended up in Montgomery. So Tuskegee was, you know, a stone's throw away down the road. And I got to Tuskegee not because I was really trying to get to Tuskegee, but I'm so thankful for that experience of being at a historically black college and university. But I got there because I got a nursing scholarship through Air Force ROTC. I had done all of these academic prep courses in high school. And to be quite honest with you, Mark, I was burnt out, and I said I was going straight to the military. And luckily I had parents and family who said, maybe there's another route. So I did Air Force ROTC. I didn't finish Air Force ROTC. I did it for 1 year. But when I got to Tuskegee, that taught me about a lot of discipline and teamwork and waking up early 3 days a week for PT and wearing uniforms on campus, right? So that just level of respect and organization that came with being in ROTC.
So you're going to Tuskegee and you pick finance?
Yes. I mean, okay, so let me tell you about that.
Okay.
You want me to break it down for you?
Yeah, we break it down because
So I truly believe that you do what you are usually exposed to, right? Or that's generally what you will lean toward. And growing up, at one point I was in these large lawyer programs, so I thought maybe I wanted to be a lawyer. And I will tell young folks all the time, don't be afraid to get off the wave, do something different, pivot or deviate. But when I got to Tuskegee, the one thing that I knew after realizing that you know, nursing was not the right path for me was that I was very good with math and numbers. I liked definitive solutions to things. And I went over and I spoke to the dean for the School of Business and Dr. Newhouse. And he sat down with me and was very intentional about asking me what my interests were and telling me what routes I could go from there and what kind of careers I could lead to. And we kind of landed on finance. You know, it was this planned kind of process. And that's how I got into being a finance major.
You know, it's interesting because you keep bringing up points about, one, when you're on a journey, sometimes you got to ask for guidance. Okay. And accept what it is they're guiding you to do.
Correct.
And you seem to have reached out with your family, you know, this dean here. And I guess you're doing what they say you got out of your own way.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, so I think that there's a message that you're giving us, particularly young people today. What would you say to them? You know, a lot of them are kind of confused as to what they want to do. What do you say to them to help make the decision process?
I would say exactly what we're talking about this evening is do your homework. There's so much at their disposal and fingertips, especially with technology, right? You can just go out and really Google anything. You know, in my day, we were like literally picking up the encyclopedia off the shelf, or, you know, you pick up the phone to call someone, and you can do that and, you know, run your own analysis of, I heard this maybe 10 years ago, and it was a very impactful in my life. How many of us have ever taken the time to do a PowerPoint deck on something that we wanted, our own dreams, our own aspirations? Mm-hmm. I took the time to do that when I was thinking about next stage opportunities, and I evaluated, here are the top companies in, let's say, Atlanta, and organizations, and these are the things that my skill sets that are strong. These are where I have gaps. And so you figure out, what do you want to do? What type of environment do you want to work in? What type of culture do you want to have? And once you start doing that and you've done your own research, then you start to have conversations and reach out to folks and ask them. I talk to folks all the time, and I say, you know, let me say, if you were in my shoes, if you had my background, what organization would you look at, or where would you point me to? So you just have to, you know, use your voice and ask the questions, but also do your own research. It's important to do some level of research so that you can have some understanding, because people want to help you, but they want to know how they can help you.
Right, right. So you're at Tuskegee, you get your, let's get forward to a New York Stock Exchange. How did we get there?
Yeah, you know, I did, I was blessed to have had been afforded the opportunity to do an internship with Merrill Lynch. And I got my foot in the door to Merrill Lynch through an organization called SEO, which is Sponsors for Educational Opportunity. It is a nonprofit organization that's been around since 63. It was focused on taking high-achieving undergraduates of color and putting them into financial services roles or roles within law firms. And I was selected out of top 10%, like 200 out of a couple thousand folks who had applied that summer, and had a chance to go work with Merrill Lynch. It was a very tough, rigorous interview process going through the SEO process. And I did an internship, 3 rotations. It was 10 weeks. There was an extra week. I'm not sure how it happened, but some type of way I got a chance to visit the New York Stock Exchange. And it was a boisterous environment. There was a lot of activity happening. I was really just excited about being there. CNBC's reporter, Maria Bartiromo, at the time, came over and took me out to where she reported the news from the floor. And all of that was just exhilarating. And I felt say to people all the time about how you impact folks. So that moment, she will, you know, we've never had a conversation about this or anything like that, but her taking me out and just taking that time to show me that, right, impacted me in ways I cannot measure. And it was just a great experience. So I got to New York and started working at the New York. I got the offer, right? So you got to do your job that summer. I got the offer. Mm-hmm. And I asked to go back to the New York Stock Exchange. Had I not asked, I don't think that it would have taken place. I would have been placed in a different division or area. So I cut my teeth, started, you know, cutting my teeth on the big board, aka the NYSE, and it was and still is the world's largest stock exchange by market capitalization of its listed companies at over $21 trillion. And it was a crazy, fun time. It was fast-paced, action-packed, very male-dominated environment, and I went in and, you know, put my head down, did my job well, like learned as much as I could, soaked it all up. It's an environment where you learn on the job. Everything is moving really, really fast. The information is being disseminated very quickly, and you have to process quickly to get it done. But it's not rocket science. I tell people it's just the pace of it and the momentum and speed of it is what really moves the market.
Well, so, yeah, but I keep hearing the same theme. You're going after what you want. Okay, you are not waiting. I mean, and I think that's another message that I'm really trying to pull out of this conversation, is that if you really want it, you got to go for it.
Right, you got to grab the bull by the horns.
Right, and hold on.
For sure, because it's going to be a ride.
It's going to be a ride. So you do the New York Stock Exchange. But you got so many other things that you're doing now. So I use this word called mission. So if we were to describe what you've described, your mission in your life right now, what would you describe that as being?
I would say my mission is really about creating access and opportunity and leaving a blueprint for others. Those are kind of top of my list. And what I mean by that is, during my time at the New York Stock Exchange, I knew that, you know, my work played out in headlines on CNBC and Bloomberg on a daily basis. I started working in 2001, and I became a broker in 2004. It was the Internet of Things, right? If you recall, we haven't always had the Internet at our fingertips. So,
no.
there was high volume. There was a lot of volatility in the marketplace. Because of, you know, dot-com bust and also 9/11, right? One of the most kind of tragic, biggest tragedies, you know, kind of in my lifetime on U.S. soil. But while I was there on the exchange, I thought about how can I help others? And I happened to be in a position by becoming a, once I became a broker, right, I had an opportunity to sit on this roundtable. And we're, if you're going to list your stocks on the exchange, right, companies pay to list their stocks on the exchange, and sometimes you may court those companies. I suggested in this session, could we bring scholars, SEO scholars, so the same organization that helped me get my foot in the door, I thought I want to expose them to this. So my mission has always been, it's not about me, it's about those who will come, who came before me and who will come after. I've tried to live my life in a way where I pay homage to those who came before, and I acknowledge their work, because were it not for them, then there could be no me. And I really believe to whom much is given, much is required. So when I was on the floor, I hosted advocated for a mock trading night and was able to get one and bring about 75 scholars from SEO, which created, you know, more access and exposure to the floor and what that environment was like for them. And, you know, one of the things that I remember is receiving a flurry of emails from those kids who had come down and experienced that, right? And whether or not they were ever going to come and work on the floor, they now were, had been exposed to something outside of their boroughs and their neighborhoods in New York City. And then the other thing that I'm really passionate about is financial literacy, financial health. And a lot of that stems from, again, coming from that rural environment, seeing family that, again, we lived great lives, very happy, but it was a stark difference and stark contrast to how I grew up and the affluence that I saw on Wall Street. So now how do I take this and the knowledge that I have and start to figure out how to help my family, immediate and extended, think about creating generational health, wealth? Right. And so yeah. With that, I've tried to insert myself in, you know, last year doing a facilitating a course around debt management at the church, a local church in the Atlanta metro area, and being a part of junior achievement, like being on their leadership council, because if you don't teach the fundamentals and the basics when someone is a youth at their, then they're going to take bad behavior or, you know, bad concepts around life and money into adulthood, right? And then the ramifications for those actions are much greater at that point. So those are things that are really important to me, you know, in terms of mission.
And you seem to be able to do that. Yeah, I see Points of Light Foundation. You know, I used to volunteer for them all over the place. I used to have a good time. You know, and you got so many things here. So you have a solution for the mission that you're trying to execute in your life. You're reaching back, you're exposing other people. So I guess that means you're very passionate about all the things we're discussing this evening.
Yeah, I am. And the thing is, everything that I've done in my life, sometimes you wonder where you are in life and what's going on. You might say, well, how did I get here? What's going on? You know, but it's building blocks. It's all been a training ground. I've learned something, developed, deepened my leadership skills in every single role. You mentioned Points of Light. That's an organization, the largest organization dedicated to volunteer service that was founded by former President George H.W. Bush. And I had a chance to work for that organization for a little over 2 years in a corporate partnerships role, and I learned about the importance of strengthening communities and community resilience, right? And how do you go in and think about communities and assess the health of those communities? And all of those things, fast forward, are helping me in my new role now working with ACE, which is Access to Capital for Entrepreneurs. And ACE is – what I really love about ACE is that the fact that we are an organization that gives people, particularly small businesses, a chance when others won't or can't. And we do that because we have what I call a community kind of loan fund. We provide capital to small businesses anywhere from $15,000 up to $1 million to help them grow and scale their business. And we also work with startups as well.
Yeah, ACE has a great story. I work with them as well. I do business coaching and try to help people get their plans together before they pitch the funder. But Grace Fricks, who started that, has a journey too. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, you think when I think about my life and being intentional about where it is that I, where I want to go and what I want to do, it has been ordered steps, but also, like you said, grabbing the bull by the horn and knowing what it is that you want. And over time, you get wiser about that in your career and life. And so I met Grace Fricks 2 years before I ever started working in the role that I'm in now. And I had a chance to hear her speak on a panel. And I was reevaluating things then, too, about what I wanted to do and how could, when we moved here from New York, I said, how can I get actively involved in the city of Atlanta? How can I be a part of the fabric of what's moving the city forward and not just live and be a resident, but really be a part of it, right? And I love Grace and Ace because it not only had the credibility and the track record, right, for being around for 19 years, she's a visionary. She started the organization with a $50,000 loan, providing business advisory services and technical assistance to folks in North Rural Georgia who were trying to figure out how to start a business. And now, fast forward 19 years later, we've loaned out over $60 million. And we have been really intentional about the work that we do. So it's the credibility, the track record, but also the impact. You know, we pride ourselves on the fact that we not only give capital, we provide coaching and we provide connections. And it's really important to have an organization that can support you around financial capital, social capital, and resource capital. And you mentioned the Women's Business Center. And the Women's Business Center is a place where you can go, whether you are a man or a woman, and talk about your business. And they'll help you with business plans and everything else in between.
So, you know, in the role that you're at ACE, how do you see, I know I'm kind of changing topics, the whole small business market going? Where are people going? With a lot of people starting them? Or what are you seeing what's going on right now?
Absolutely. There is a lot of business startup in Atlanta in particular, or Georgia generally. And I think that post-financial crisis, right, if you roll it back and you try to peel back the onion to understand where this is coming from. You had people who have enterprising mindsets, but you also had folks who they had no choice, right? The market crashed, and I had to figure out how do I reinvent myself? How do I reestablish myself? And so a lot of businesses were started then. Within communities of color, their businesses are being started at a much more rapid pace. I think Atlanta is right behind New York City in terms of businesses started by folks of color. And so there is a lot of opportunity here. But we also know that there are certain barriers and challenges out there, and Atlanta is certainly a tale of two cities. Brooklyn Institute has it down as one of the most highest on the list of income inequality cities. So we're trying to figure out how can we deal with access to capital, access to opportunity, access to markets. And we know that being a small business owner, that if you compare a Caucasian household and an African-American household, generally there are studies that show that there's 13 times more wealth in that white household. When you benchmark that against an African-American household that has a small business, then that multiplier shrinks down at only 3 times. And that is huge when we talk about how that changes the dynamics for that family. And if you are a small business owner, you tend to also hire folks from that community. So now you're also creating jobs within the community. And one of the things that I always talk about is if you can keep a dollar in the community longer, right, and increase the tax basis, then that community will have more funds and assets for education and other things. So if I live in a community that is a food desert, then I have to go outside my community to buy groceries. I'm no longer putting those assets and that revenue into that community. So what we do at ACE is primarily, right, we're providing loan capital. And patient capital to individuals. However, the things that are less tangible is that we are also helping to. Well, we can quantify this. We're helping to create jobs, but those other pieces are changing families, giving people examples within their communities of businesses that are being successful. So we try to support legacy businesses, you know, as well as startup businesses.
You know, it's great what you're saying because you're almost getting back to the village raising the village.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think that when Grace started ACE, that's the kind of concept she had, and it seems like everyone I've met that worked there is in that same mindset. you know, just really helping the holistically the entire family. So, you know what? I was sitting here going, I think there may be 23 people running for president. Okay, Martina Marshall Edwards. Okay, throw your hat in there.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Thank you for the compliment. I will stay away from politics from that perspective. However, you know, I do believe in understanding what is going on, though, when it comes to politics, about what's happening on the local and state level and being involved in that way. Because those are things that really are going to impact you, whether people are talking about opportunity zones or something else. But, you know, there are a lot of things to be really conscious of. But like you said, yes, getting back to ACE and the community and village aspect, I came to ACE because I thought that it was a great place to align my purpose and my passion, where I could be a community quarterback, and because I could see myself right in those communities and the individuals. We focus on people of color, women, and I could see myself, low to moderate income folks, in those individuals, because my life, even though I always tell people that, you know, life can blow you brisk or gentle breezes, and to be very clear about how you treat people and things like that. And so my goal in life is to serve, invest, and return value. In my job, but also in my personal life. So in terms of legacy that I'm trying to build for my family, you know, I'd love to at some point create a platform so that I can share knowledge around financial health and what it means to have financial vision and put plans in place around estate planning and wills and having insurance, you know, so all of these things. So I got a lot, you know, I turned 40 this year and I've got a lot of things ahead of me that I'm hoping to be able to do and accomplish. But I'm very thankful for being able to start out my career in an environment that, like I said, was the epicenter for how currency was exchanged by starting to work on the Florida New York Stock Exchange. What the NYSE gave me, and I try to impart this on other people, is an equity mindset. It was a place, the equity in itself refers to ownership, where folks came to exchange shares of stock. You had to have a buyer, you had to have a seller. And in life, I think that we need to be sure that we focus on being owners and own more than we owe, and just have an equity mindset and be bold and fearless in the things that you want to do.
I tell you, you mentioned earlier about you want to eventually start getting out, spreading this message. When you listen to the playback of this show, you just started, okay? I mean, you really broken down quite a few topics in a short amount of time. And, you know, I can help you figure out how to get it out there. But one question I do want to ask is, future. What do you see happening for you in the future? I don't want you to give away any secrets or anything, but what do you see? Where are you going?
Well, right now I am going to focus on helping ACE to, we have this strategic plan in place to double the size of our loan portfolio by 2022. And we are trying to go from being a $23 million portfolio to a $50-plus million portfolio. And we do a lot of the good work that we do from getting patient capital from different investment sources. And we basically take loans and then lend those out and when folks can't meet the traditional credit box of a bank. We also have to have grants to be able to do that, to support the operations, because we function as a nonprofit. So from a business perspective, I am all about figuring out how we swing for the fences and achieve these goals, because when we are able to have more loan capital available to deploy, then we will be able to change the faces of these communities, reduce the wealth gap within particularly the African-American community. And we've got a lot of collaborators going on in the city of Atlanta around that. that I'm excited about. From a personal standpoint, I am thinking, I've been told several times, so I'm going to put it in the ether, that I should write a book. So I am going to look and work on that, as well as think about what that educational platform could be and what that speaking, what those speaking opportunities could be and look like, to continue to share my background, which is ultimately about letting people see that someone else has done it, and it's not rocket science, and you have what you need to do it. You just have to be able to execute on it. And I didn't know anything about Wall Street, right? But I knew that I dreamed big, that I wanted to be successful in something. And that's happened to be what I latched on to, and the opportunity that was presented for me and the door that opened for me. You know, one thing that we didn't talk about, again, with the access and opportunity, is when I went back and I worked for SEO, the organization in New York City that helped me get my foot in the door to Wall Street. And I spent 5 years working with them before moving here to Atlanta to help launch an alternative investments program that really focused on helping first and second year investment banking analysts figure out how to more effectively compete for roles in private equity. And this is kind of the higher upper echelon of PE. And everyone's been talking about in the last couple of weeks what Robert Smith was able to do for Morehouse's graduation, for those folks graduating, right? And I had the privilege and honor of meeting him in 2013, exchanging correspondence. We at SEO, we honored him and we saluted him for being a trailblazer in the private equity industry by giving him a Reginald F. Lewis Award. And we spoke with Loita Lewis, right, who is a widow of Reginald F. Lewis, who was the first African-American to do a billion-dollar deal in private equity. And so that was an honor, too. So it's just so many things in life that I've had a chance to get exposed to. But my time at SEO was me giving my time, talent, and treasure back to an organization that had poured so much into me and then helping to open the door for so many other people. So I truly believe that if your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, then and that's leadership, right? And so my legacy is, I appreciate all the applause that people tell me for shattering glass ceilings. But for me, it's also about how I can be significant and not just successful in life. And being significant is really about opening doors for others and giving them a blueprint and a roadmap.
Like I said, number 23 running for president. That campaign speech sounded good.
All right.
So I'll tell you what.
Only if you're going to be the campaign manager.
Yeah. Well, we may need to discuss that. But I tell you, it's hearing your message, you definitely need to write a book, and I could help you with that. Because the book will give you a platform to start really speaking from it and telling your story. And I think a number of people need to hear it, particularly from where you came from to where you're at today. And the fact is that you just kept grabbing that bull and holding on and asking people how to ride it better. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So with the whole asking people thing, I want you to spend just a few minutes talking about some summary advice, some pearls of wisdom that you can give to people that have listened to you speak, are kind of troubled right now in the direction they should be taking, and how to overcome, I want to say, getting out of their own way.
Absolutely. I would say, and I can speak from this because I've dealt with it, you know, I have experienced, you know, how do you have faith over fear, and how do you push through even when you're struggling with something to continue to move forward? So just believe in yourself, know that you are well able, that you're capable, that you have the aptitude. What you don't know, you can go out and learn, right? You can have a circle of advisors, right? Never just have people who look and think like you. Have folks who have a diversity of thought, diversity of mindset, and they will start to help you really start to build what it is that you want. But you have to come to your own judgment about you know, whether it's fundamental true value, you're talking about investing, or value of a business or an idea, and really believe that you have value that you bring to the table, and then move forward with it. You just have to go for it. And the time is right and now for folks of color. I would definitely say, too, there are entrepreneur of color funds out there. There are, you know, there are so many women building activities that are happening. So I think now is the time, and you've got to strike while the iron is hot, and move forward and just believe that you can do it.
Right. Well, I tell you what, I need to thank you for spending as much time as you spent with me this evening. Normally I go to break, but I said, I'm not stopping. We just going to keep going. All right. We did a fantastic job. And anything I can do to help you get the word out there, we're going to set up a session with you and I, and we're going to talk about, we may not talk about the presidential thing, but we're going to talk about some other things.
That sounds like a plan, and I am most thankful and gracious for you having me on your show and giving me a platform to be able to share my background and my story, and I look forward to continued dialogue with you.
Well, I tell you, when Brian and Kevin from Influencing 365 say we need to get her on the show, I do what they tell me to do. All right. So, Martina, I look forward to meeting you and working with you, and I thank you once again for coming out to the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later. You know, sometimes when you hear a story, it inspires you. Sometimes when you hear a story, it shows you that you're not in this by yourself. Sometimes when you hear a story, you find out that there are ways to overcome obstacles that you may not have considered. I think you heard tonight on this show, you know, some basic things about going for what you want. And I think sometimes we have to do that, even if those around us don't understand exactly what we're trying to get accomplished. Because I'm very certain when she was in that town, I can't remember the name of it, but she started talking about going to Tuskegee, New York Stock Exchange. I'm sure family members and friends were like, New York? But she grabbed the bull and stayed on it. And I think some of the other important things that she talked about were reaching back, helping other people understand that there are people out here that are willing to help them. You know, and we do that by exposure. So I want you to think about not just yourself and what your mission is in life. I want you to put some same equal time to thinking about what you can do to improve the lives of others. And sometimes those lives are right next to us. Our family, our cousins, our nephews, our nieces, even our parents still. So I think that you're going to have to start putting a plan together. She created a PowerPoint deck. Okay, I'm not sure what you want to create, but you got to create something. And I think it's all about, you know, I talk about writing a plan, a business plan, PowerPoint plan. But I think you really need to start figuring out what it is you want to do. So, with that said, I want to thank you for listening. I'll be back next week, every Monday evening, 7 p.m. I'm also nationally syndicated now. I'm on at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. on Wednesdays on the LMB Network. Got some great news coming up. We're going to be starting a television show in Atlanta. So I'll clue you in on that as we get started with it. But great things are happening. I want you to stay tuned. I got a lot in store for you. And always, I want to thank you for your support. And I look forward to our next encounter. I'll talk with you next week.
This evening on the CapaBuilder Talk radio show with your host, Mark E. Parham. It is our mission to provide you with the information you need to make educated decisions, decisions that will help you walk in your purpose. We are here every Monday evening starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To be a guest or for more information, go to CapaBuilderTalk.com. Please post comments on Facebook.com/CapBuilderTalk. We hope you enjoy the show.